Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 25, the characteristics of King Paranjana, representing the embodied soul, text number 44. Upakimano lalitam. Kai kai, Pidham parivritasti bhi, Radhinim avisaschacha, Agi yamano lalitam, Tachachacha kai kai, Upakiyam manho lalitam Tachachachakarikai Sridham parivritashtivhi Raddini avishaschacha Upagi Yamanaha, being sung about Lalitam, very nicely. Tatra Tatra, here and there. Cha, also. Gayakai, by the singers. Kidam, playing. Paripuritaha, surrounded. Sribir, by women. Radhinim, in the water of the river. Avishat, entered. Shucho, when it was too hot. Translation. Many professional singers used to sing about the glories of King Paranjana and his glorious activities. When it was too hot in the summer, he used to enter a reservoir of water. He would surround himself with many women and enjoy their company. Purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. A living being has different activities in different stages of life. One stage is called Jagrata, or the life of awakening. And another is called Sapna, or the life of dream. Another stage is called Susupti, or life in an unconscious state. And still another stage occurs after death. In the previous verse, the life of awakening was described. That is, the man and the woman were married and enjoyed life for 100 years. In this verse, life in the dream state is described. Or the activities of Paranjana accomplished during the day were also reflected at night in the dream state. Pranjana used to live with his wife for sense enjoyment. And at night, this very sense enjoyment was appreciated in different ways. A man sleeps very soundly when he is greatly fatigued. And when a rich man is greatly fatigued, he goes to his garden house with many female friends, and there enters the water and enjoys their company. Such is the tendency of the living entity within this material world. A living entity is never satisfied with a woman unless he is trained in the system of brahmacharya. Generally, a man's tendency is to enjoy many women, and even at the very end of life, the sex impulse is so strong that even though one is very old, he still wants to enjoy the company of young girls. Thus, because of the strong sex impulse, the living entity becomes more and more involved in this material world. Yam Timirandasa Tanandana Sakaya Chakshuram Vatanjina Tasma Shri Yuravina Maha. Jai Tam Sutra Pango Namamandam Jekti Mitsura Svabhidam Bojo Jada Madhava Omino. Can you give me Chaitanya Charitamrita under the volume 1? I just want to read the translation of that verse. Text 15. Jayatam Srito Pango Mamandami Teriti Matsadasva Padambo Jo Radha Mohano. Glory to the all merciful Radha and Madana Mohan. I am lame and ill advised, and yet they are my directors, and their lotus feet are everything to me. So, here we see in this pastime of Pranjana, who represents all of us, so we shouldn't laugh, that you can see, you know, how slow spiritual advancement is, that, you know, life after life, for 100 years, if we manage to live that long, basically we will make a family, and of course for the husband and wife, the parents, you know, the main aspect of that is sex life, the sense gratification. You know, Srila Prabhupada describes that when the nature of a young girl is that when they reach puberty, then sex desire comes and becomes quite prominent. Otherwise, before that, it's not really there. And but then it becomes very prominent. And if they become attached to a particular boy who satisfies her in that way, then she will love that boy for the rest of his life, practically regardless of who he is to some degree. So Prabhupada uses that example, that you know, that attachment, it forms, particularly around that sex life. But if that sex life wasn't there, that lifelong attachment would not develop. So the real attachment is that sex life. So, you know, for men and women. So one's whole life revolves around that, one's entire life. And next life, the same. Here it's describing, describes that in awakening. So throughout the whole of our awakening life, that becomes the basis of everything. Even our economic development, people are very interested in business, but actually if there's no, sex life, then, even the business, they're not so much interested. They lose interest. The great warriors and, on the battlefront, it's quite often there's a great woman, who is it, Mark Anthony, Cleopatra, there's someone behind them, otherwise they may not have gone into so many battles and tried to conquer so many empires. So, so that's in the waking life, it's like that. Basically sex attraction, people don't have a lot of impetus to do much, but you see the great footballers and, so many different personalities, who do extraordinary things. There's a relationship there. Either there was a relationship that they currently have that spurs them on, or there's a relationship that they may have had and lost which spurs them on, or there's a relationship they never will have but they would like to have that spurs them on.
Very true.
What's that?
Motivation.
Somehow or another, it's there. So then, that was described in the previous verse. And although we're moving on to the next verse, it describes that even in one's sleeping state, so then when one goes to sleep, pretty much the same thing goes on, that what one has thought about during the day and one dreams of at night. In fact, wherever one may not have found the satisfaction, so one's partner may start to become old, and the body starts to deteriorate, and it's described the beauty of a woman is like the sits like a dewdrop on the tip of a lotus petal.
Fire and butter.
What's that?
Fire and butter. Fire and butter.
No, we're going back to the lotus petal. we're not there yet. No, it's just the dewdrop on the tip of the lotus. Just meditate on that for a while. It's quite significant. It's a big point that at any moment it's just going to disappear. It doesn't last long. It's sort of there in the morning and then it's gone. But especially a lotus, because water can't stick to lotuses. So therefore, sometimes people. Or people have one wife, and even if she's beautiful, they're dreaming that one wife is not sufficient, and their dreams as many girls chasing them throughout the night, or they're chasing them, and young girls, and so many different things. So all these, whatever we can't, realize within, the daytime, then at night time we're trying to satisfy those, in a dreamlike state. So. This takes up, so therefore you can imagine and of course this goes on not just in human life but then in 8,400,000 different species of life. So you can imagine how slow is our spiritual life. Therefore this verse, Jayatam Sivatur Pangor, Mamma Manda Mater Giti, that Pango, so the author of the Chaitanya Charitamrita, you know, he is talking about himself, that you know, spiritually I'm lame. I cannot move very fast, moving very slow. You know, to see a lame person or an elderly person, you see sometimes the brahmacharis whip up the stairs to Vishadam. Some of the elderly gentlemen and ladies, you know, last in line. But, you know, so in spiritual life we move like that. You know, a bit haphazard, jerky, you know, sometimes falling over. You know, so our spiritual life is like that because this time, you know, as Prabhupada says here, because of the strong sex impulse, the living entity becomes more and more involved in this material world. So it just entangles all our energy, all our thoughts, all our intelligence, and in fact, birth after birth, it consumes each lifetime. You know, each and every lifetime. It's quite a thought, isn't it? So, therefore, and then he says, you know, this word, mama, of me, mandamati, very foolish. Mama, mandamati. So this word, manda, which is also mentioned in the Srimad Bhagavatam, there's a verse also describing these same words. You know, again, means bad or mad, you know, even crazy. Bad in the sense that because there's a sense of foolishness and madness, we accept this material body like Paranjana, as a place of enjoyment, and we actually come to this material world, and our attitude in this world is that whatever we see in this world is just meant for my enjoyment, and that's, you know, that's called bad. That's, you know, if you have a family or any community, anyone who thinks like that, you know, someone just walks in. You know, someone walks in this temple here. Whatever these Hare Krishnas are doing, that's, I don't care. This place, I'm going to come here. This is meant for my enjoyment. But sometimes you see that actually, you know, some people come in and they see the nice bench out in the courtyard there. So they've been drinking the alcohol and taking the drugs, and you know, and they think, oh, I'll just lay on the bench here. For 4, 5, 6 hours, this whole place, you know, if anyone's disturbed in their sleep, it's shh, you know, chanting too loud. And then, you know, so it's a place to, you know, fill the belly and lay down and sleep like that. I used to have a problem in this little room, the Juggy room, I'll call it Juggy room, but it's our ammunition room, we have books and paraphernalia for preaching. But, people used to come in there and just sleep, and it used to drive me crazy. And I'd say to them, you know, this is not a place to sleep. You know, this is actually where devotees work and do so many different things. But they couldn't. These are actually devotees who were, you know, doing service here. And it took me months and months and months to convince them, because there's a sense of madness. You know, I'm tired, this is for me to sleep, you know, even in the Hare Krishna temple. So, you know, one becomes really bewildered. So, but this, you know, when I say one, I mean me. Here we see this great personality. He's actually teaching us how to think, because actually this is, you know, we should all think like this. You know, when we read these verses, we have to be careful not to you know, think, you know, these verses particularly meant so that I can see the foolishness of, you know, everyone in this world. But more than anything, these verses of the Bhagavad Gita is that so we will actually look at ourselves. That you know, this is my position, because when we understand our position, then we can, and we do something about that, then we can help others as well in a very compassionate way. So he is saying like that, that spiritually. So then the answer to this problem, of course, in one sense we talk about you know, the awakening stage where we live out our, you know, 100 years if we're lucky to get that, and then our dream state. But in fact, the entire duration of our life really is a dream-like state. It's an illusory state. We're really forgetfulness of our own nature and our own situation. So sometimes we dream something, and, you know, we wake up and then we realise, everything is different to what I was dreaming. This word bad, manga, meaning everyone is bad or mad, Prabhupada describes it, you know, it means that we've decided to inhabit this material body. And he says that from Brahma, you know, down to the tiniest little living entity, if you're in the material world, it's because you've been bad. It's because you're bad. You know, in other words, where we should be, if we had a proper state of heart, an attitude, we were completely pure in all our activities, in our heart, we'd be in the spiritual world. And as soon as we become bad, manda, we actually end up here in a mature body, which is like a prison for the soul. So, as Prabhupada said, you know, if anyone is in the prison house, even though some are thinking I'm doing this is a good thing, you know, but basically they're all bad because they're all in prison. You know, that is our situation. So, we have accepted this material body, and whatever our concept of enjoyment, what is good, you know, or anything, all of that is somewhat illusory. Our real aim in life should be get out of the prison of the repeated birth and death in these material bodies, in this material world. That's the real goal of life. Otherwise, you know, we don't want to become, if someone is in the prison house and they feel that they're making so much progress and enjoying, then basically their whole existence is an illusion or a dream. Prabhupada gives this example that, you know, in a prison house, sometimes you see them that they're breaking rocks. You know, so they're breaking and smashing these rocks. And you see even, you know, around Victoria in different places where many different rocks are stacked up as fences and things. Sometimes they used to get the prisoners to, you know, get the rocks out of the field and make fences and so many different things. But and sometimes they'd have to break those rocks. So Prabhupada describes that if a person goes to the prison to rehabilitate them and says, your actual business is not breaking these rocks. Mm-hmm. You know, your actual business is to, you know, and feel that somehow, you know, you're progressing and enjoying some sort of benefits because you've done your duty right. So we've broken all the rocks, so we're going to get, you know, an extra little bit of mashed potato tonight, or, you know, something like that. Or maybe we'll get our pillow back or something, or we won't get it beaten as much as we did yesterday. So we're thinking that, you know, there's some happiness from that, but actually the real happiness means you've just got to get out of there. So what they do, Prabhupada says, is that they actually become angry at the person, you know, that why are you wasting time talking, because you're just disturbing, we're trying to break these rocks, get our quota done, and you're not doing any work, so you're useless, right? Why are you not breaking any rocks? And then you're talking to all the prisoners and you're disturbing them when they're supposed to be breaking rocks. So, but if they actually hear that person, they understand, yes, the real business is... So, in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says the same thing. In the 7th chapter, he says... this whole 7th chapter, which is called Knowledge of the Absolute Truth, Sri Bhagavana Vacha, Maya Shakti Mana Pata Yogam Yunjan Marashaya Asamsayam Samagramam Yataja Sashi Tachtanu. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, said, now hear, O Samaprita, how by practicing yoga in full consciousness of me, with mind attached to me, you can know me in full, free from doubt. So there Krishna is saying that to take you from the dreamlike state, the illusory state of existence, I'm going to tell you what the reality is. Just hear that. Then when you're doing your work, you work always with a conception of reality. What is the actual picture of your life? So, that knowledge, which is presented in the Bhagavad Gita, because, as Krishna says, as he describes in the Bhagavad Gita, that he says, there's from my material energy and my spiritual energy, everything you see in this world is a manifestation of my two energies, the living entity and the who's conscious and eternal, and the material energy from which all things come. Actually, the manifestations primarily arise from the spiritual energy. Life comes from life. So if we see, you know, if there's a child is born, if the life is there, the child will grow. If the life is not there, the child will not grow.
Still grow.
So actually, all manifestations of matter depend upon life. So from this combination of the living entity and the material energy, everything that we see in this world comes about. So Krishna is saying, so what you are looking at, whenever you see anything in this world, you're looking at me in the form of my energy. He goes on to describe in different ways that whatever we find satisfying and attractive, that's actually me. As an example, when you drink water and you feel this is so refreshing, that taste of pure water, there's nothing that can quench your thirst, and you know that is just, you know, being created in abundance by the Supreme Lord. You know, we cannot produce that with our, you know, billion-dollar water refinery type, you know, what they call it, water purification. They try and get some seawater and purify it. You know. Actually, you know, you can get some water like that, but it costs you billions of dollars. You can never actually supply the world like that. It actually must come from nature. in proper quantity to satisfy everyone in this world, all living entities in all the different places that they are. You know, even if humans, you know, get some, a little bit of water to get themselves out of trouble, are they going to be able to give water to all other living entities? No, that's not possible. So that satisfying nature is very attractive. You know, people search after that. In fact, they're now fighting wars over it. And there'll be more wars because it's so desirable that it's killed for it. Like that, that war. So he says, that's me. That is a manifestation. And anything you see. So here, we take it back to King Karanjana. You know, when we look, you know, the male looks at the opposite sex and sees a beautiful woman, and we think, oh, very, very beautiful. And the woman is looking at the man thinking, oh, very, very beautiful. Actually, what we're looking at is Krishna, that it's because of his energies that there is this attractiveness. So actually what we're searching, therefore the very name Krishna means all attractive. What we're actually searching for is Krishna. But because we're you know, very slow, hesitant, and you know, always misguided, as here, you know, Krishna Das Kaviraj says that I am lame and ill-advised. If I do get some knowledge in this world, it only compounds my foolishness and my illusion. Okay. So, therefore, as Bhaktivinoda Thakura says, the more one is materially educated, the more one becomes like an ass. Now, let's put that to the test. What does an ass do? And then let's compare what people in this world are doing and see if he's correct. An ass, they work hard like an ass. So, that's because he thinks he's an ass.
You're near to work.
What's that?
You're near to work.
Yeah, well, he could stop. He works under fear. He works under fear that if he stops working, he won't get the fed.
Yes.
But actually, what he needs is actually there. And so, again, you know, Krishna describes that he is maintaining all living entities, but we don't see that. We see that the boss is giving the pay packet. We only see that part. So, you know, as Prabhupada said, you know, the communists used to come into the village and they'd say, do you have bread? Oh, no, no, sir, we have no bread. And, you know, they're worshipping God, praying to God. So you're praying to God, you have no bread. No, we have no bread. So, well, we have a truckload of bread. So, who is better, your God or us communists? Oh, you, sir, yes. So, as Prabhupada said, they never think to ask, well, where did you get that bread? You know. Basically, what they did was they confiscated all the land of the people so that they can't grow their food anymore. It all belongs to the state now. And then, you know, put them in an impoverished condition because all the money from the government is being used for this, you know, elaborate wars and, you know, ballrooms, you know, the palace and so many different things. And, you know, the peasants had nothing. So, you know, but they don't ask that. How did you come to get a truckload of bread? You know, that. So actually, ultimately, by the arrangement of the Supreme Lord, Prabhupada explained, even the poor people in India previously, most of them had land. Most people in India for centuries and centuries and centuries, even the poor people had a little land, one cow, and you know, they used to. Prabhupada said when he was a young boy, his father had one servant, he came there, you know, he worked for so many months in a year, and I think he did that for a few years. And he managed to save himself, you know, enough to purchase a block of land, and he never worked for anyone again a day. And he was a very poor person, just a humble servant a day. But so the point is that, you know, we're ill-advised, and when we, our education makes us like an ass, so people work very, very hard, but they don't have to work hard. They can actually stop and see, well, if God is maintaining all living entities, and I depend on him rather than the communists and so many different things, then, you know, why do I have to work like an ass? Now, what else does the other do? Then the ass, after working very, very hard, they try to get some sleep. But when they're sleeping, they're constantly in fear that the master will come and beat them with a stick. They get up, time to work again. You're sleeping too long. You know, your 5 minutes is up and beat you. And then when they're awake, at the risk of getting a kick in the head, they're chasing the she mule ass for sex life. Constantly getting a kick in the head, but they're thinking, you know, in the end it'll be all worth it. And that takes up about 3 or 4 seconds of their life. The kicking is a lot longer. So, and what do we see around the world? Actually, this is what people are doing. So, but Krishna says, you know, this is an illusory dreamlike happiness in this prison of material existence. You know, if you hear from me the reality, what is the reality? Where you, as an eternal soul, can be eternally happy. If you hear that, you'll come out of this illusion, out of this ignorance. So, in that Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, in the so he explains that basically whatever you see in this world, there appears to be so many different varieties of things, and there seems to be so many causes. This has come from this. This has come from that. I'm the seed of everything, he says. You go back to one cause or the seed of some existence. Even if you go to Brahman, I am the seed of that. If you go to Paramatma, I am the seed of that. Everything. So, in that Bhagavad Gita, he says, in the 13th or 12th, he says that know that all states of being, be they of goodness, passion, or ignorance, are manifest by my energy. I am in one sense everything, but I am independent. I am not under the mode of material nature, for they, on the contrary, are within me. So everything we're looking at, that is Krishna. So then one may think. So that Krishna is also, because he is everything, then he is under the influence of material cause and effect. No, he says. And the example that Prabhupada gives, so for instance, in the prison, everything that happens to the prisoners, they're under the control of the different departments of the the rulers' laws. So the king, prime minister, whatever you want to call him, let's call him the king, it's easier. The king has his rules, and everyone in the prison, you know, some are A-caste prisoners, some are, you know, down the bottom, some are a little bit mixed. They're all under the rules of the, but the king is not under those rules. So Krishna, these three modes of material nature, everyone is being bewildered and controlled by these modes of material nature, but Krishna is not under them, even though everything is in fact going on, because it is non-different from Krishna. So just like the king made the prison, the king put the prisoners in there, the king gave them the clothes, the king is maintaining them. In the same way, God has made this material world, he has put us in this world, he has given us these prison uniforms, sometimes a human body, sometimes a demigod, sometimes a really bad prison uniform of a dog or an ass. So, He says that Tribi Gunamai Bhave Ve Sarvam Dhamji, that Mohitam Bhavijanati Mami Vyana Paramabhyayam, deluded by the three modes, goodness, passion, and ignorance, the whole world does not know me, who am above the modes and inexhaustible. So this is Krishna's, what Krishna does, is that when we look, we're only seeing Krishna and his energy. But the nature of the modes of material nature is that we can't see God anywhere, as Queen Kunti says. Now that is a fascinating thing, that God is everywhere, but we cannot see him anywhere at any time. I saw this gentleman the other day. I was at a home program. He's an older man, about 80, and he said, "I saw you about 10 years ago at another home program." I said, "Oh." He said, "I remember what you said." I said, "What did I say?" He said, "I asked you one question." I said, "Have you ever seen Krishna?" And I said, "What did I say?" He said, "You said you hadn't, but you always feel his presence." And I said, "And from that, have you seen Krishna?" And he started crying. He says, "Krishna is so kind to me." You know, once he started feeling Krishna's presence, he understood, "I'm seeing Krishna everywhere." Because it's not different. So, but generally, you know, we can't see Krishna. We're looking at Krishna all the time. Krishna is working because it's called, as the next verse describes, that this divine energy of mine, if one surrenders unto me, he can easily cross beyond it. It's called divine energy because it's working under the will of the divine Lord.
Devi Ashramanai Mamaya Vidya Mami Vidasthi Mahayakam Kandidis.
Thank you. From the words of the Mahatmas, then we get purified. So, because in the association of the Mahatmas, actually Krishna says, "Hear from me." But when he says, you know, "Take shelter of me, Arjuna, hear from me," he means, you know, Arjuna, of course, is hearing directly from Krishna. Generally, we're not in the direct association of Krishna, in one sense. So we hear from, you know, the Mahatmas, or those who are under the shelter of Krishna. It's the same thing. Actually, there's no difference. There's no difference in the effect, and we hear the same message. So, now, this transcendental knowledge, Krishna goes on to explain many different things, but he explains that in verse 17 he describes that one who is situated in this knowledge, then on the spiritual path they're completely protected. Right? So it's, you know, Krishna, when we hear from Krishna, he points out, this is the illusion of your existence. Don't be like King Karanjana. You can immediately come to the spiritual platform just by hearing, and from that you'll understand your illusory conditioned life and dreamlike state of existence, and you'll understand the reality. And when you work in that way, you're completely protected from the effects of the material energy, even though you're in the material body. So this hearing process, by hearing about Krishna, very, very important. So there's actually a nice pastime to show how above all things. So bhakti is the only way Krishna, by hearing from Krishna, that's bhakti. There are 9 processes of bhakti. The beginning, especially, but always the most important, is to always hear from Krishna or his representative. As soon as we stop hearing from Krishna or his representative, immediately material energy will, you know, take us. So this hearing process is described in the Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita that it can immediately and very easily take one to the liberated platform, out of the illusion and to the point of reality where all one's activities, one's thought, one's mind, everything is on the liberated platform. So one time when Srimati Radharani and Krishna were going through the Vrindavan forest, Radharani wanted to take Krishna off alone to enjoy some separate time, just Radharani and Krishna. But they left the other, they sort of snuck off from all the other gopis. Although the nature of the devotees is that when they understand that Krishna's lotus feet are everything, that is the reality, that is the shelter, then they always follow his lotus feet. And never, so, you know, this verse, glory to all merciful Radha Madhava Mahan, I am laying their advice, yet they are my directors and their lotus feet are everything to me. That for people in this grass, for me, can't talk about the exalted persons in my presence, but for myself, you know, many, many lifetimes, you know, taking shelter of the material energy, you know, the sense gratification. So, you know, my spiritual progress is very slow and haphazard. Gradually hearing from these great personalities like Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur and Krishnadas Kaviracharya, that rather, after hearing that everything is Krishna, and actually therefore Krishna's mercy is everything, and that mercy means we take shelter of the lotus feet of Krishna. That mercy. Now, how do we become so fortunate that our only possession is Krishna's lotus feet? You know, for us to dare to say that his lotus feet, they're my only possession. How do we become so fortunate that we can actually take that as a possession? Of course, only if Krishna allows. Krishna explains that if one engages in devotional service, then one will attain the lotus feet of the personality of God by his grace. That's verse 7. one cannot understand anything, even if one hears, unless one hears from a devotee and hears from Krishna, and in a devotional mood, a submissive mood to Krishna, a mood of bhakti, even if there are significant motivations, it will affect one's ability to understand what Krishna is saying, teaching us to see that reality. If we engage in devotional service unmotivated and try to hear from Krishna, he will reveal himself. Therefore, Śrīla Bhaktisiddhānta Sarasvati Thakura said that don't try to act in such a way that you will see God, but act in such a way that God will see you. In other words, we try to be a nice devotee, engaged in devotional service, and Krishna reveals himself. And he gives you, as Prabhupada says, then Krishna will say, yes, you can have the shelter of my lotus feet, and they become your only possession. The lotus feet of Radha Madhava Mahan, that is your only possession, means that because Madhana means Cupid. Cupid means is the personification of attraction to sex life in this world. Madhana Mahan, Krishna, is unlimitedly more attractive than money of this material world. So much so, as we're telling this pastime, that the gopis, who are the most beautiful damsels within anywhere, material or spiritual, you know, we hear about the stories of Urvasi, the heavenly damsel, that just by hearing their bangles, great sages like Vishvamrita, or who was it? Who was it who heard the bangles of Vishwamrita. So beautiful, so attractive just to hear the bangles. And, you know, he fell down from his spiritual platform. And the gopis are millions of times more beautiful. Krishna is so attractive that they're chasing after him. And also, you know, he has 16,108 wives. So, one time Krishna was with the gopis, and they're chasing his lotus feet because they're just so attracted to him. And Radharani has gone off with Krishna, and then Radharani, she felt, I'm a little tired now, and she was about to jump on the shoulders of Krishna. And Krishna heard the other gopis' voices, or they're coming, and he thought, I don't want to be here to hear the criticism, because here I am alone with Radharani, they're not going to be happy about that. So he disappeared. So when he disappeared from that spot, Radharani fell down, and the only thing that saved her life was she just literally fainted. Otherwise she would have died on the spot of separation, because, you know, Krishna is just so attractive that, you know, one moment without Krishna is unbearable to live. That is called love. As we know, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, you know, someone saw Chaitanya Mahaprabhu crying. Oh, you know, you're showing these signs of love of God. I said, no, no. I'm just doing that for display, you know, to attract attention. Oh, no, I see. You know, that's not true. You're shedding these tears, you know. You're very sincere. Oh, no. If there was any love in me, even a pinch of love for Krishna properly, why am I still living? How is it possible to have love for Krishna properly and to go on living in this material world? We get a little glimpse of what it means to be attracted. So, anyway, at that place there's a tree, I think it's still there. There's a tree there, I think it's still there. And for, you know, ages and ages, devotees would go there and immerse themselves in this attractive feature. You know, Radha Madana Mahan, who attracted, you know, his beautiful pastimes, loving pastimes, attract the gopis. And then, actually, one time, this very elderly lady moved into the area, and she was very poor, and there was a grinding stone there, and she used to grind grains. And then what little grains that she could sell, you know, that... So she's very poor, she was blind, very elderly, so she just stayed there. And, you know. So anyway, but these devotees would congregate under that very tree where Radharani fainted in separation from Krishna. And yeah, every day they discuss the beautiful pastimes of Radha and Krishna like that. And anyway, she's grinding away, and they couldn't hear themselves. And you know, they're thinking, they wanted her to go to another place and do that. But they knew she couldn't because she was too old and blind, and they thought, we'll go somewhere. So then Krishna's thinking to himself, I want my devotees to hear about my pastimes, because this is, you know, what saves them. This is the medicine that will take them back to the spiritual world if their hearts become absorbed in the pure spiritual love of Radha Krishna. So Krishna, to bless the devotees who were hearing and chanting, so just like we're hearing their pastimes, to bless those devotees, he appeared before the old woman who was making the nuisance. Now this is very interesting. But sometimes, you said we're talking about if one takes shelter of the Mahatmas. So sometimes even people come into the community who are, you know, seeing things really as their place for enjoyment. They come into a Hare Krishna temple or the association, they're thinking, this facility is for me. Sometimes Krishna blesses them with Krishna consciousness so they don't disturb everyone. He is so merciful, so loving. I think that's what happened to me. So anyway, what happened was, yeah, I do. I feel like that old blind lady. She's lame in spiritual life. So Krishna put his foot on the grinding stone, and he said, "You know, you're making so much noise that they cannot properly hear and tenet about my pastime." And she's saying, "Well, if I go away, it's very difficult. If I stop making, I cannot really go anywhere. If I stop making the grains, then I have no income." So then Krishna pressed his feet into the grinding stone and left his permanent impression there, which is still there. And he said, "You can be the custodian." And when the world knows that I have placed my footprint there permanently, people will come and I'll place the coins there. You'll never go without anything. And so she didn't have to do her. She was her maintenance, her income, everything was taken care of. She didn't have to work anymore, and the devotees could happily go along hearing and chanting. So it's very nice, Krishna's saying, "Hear from me." Now, the mudhas, the Naradamas, the Mayapriyans, and the atheists, we're not stopping to hear from these devotees. We've got too much important, self-inflicted rock-breaking to do in this material world. We have no time to hear from the devotees. But what they don't understand is if they just do that, Krishna will intervene in their life. They will no longer have to work like asses. They will no longer be, bewildered by materialistic, animalistic knowledge and some atheistic views. Krishna will, take care of them. So any devotee who, takes up and not only that, but they'll be cured of this material desire, lust of desire, which just burns in the heart life after life and is never ever satisfied, and which just embarrasses us in so many different stages of life. By hearing about Krishna, that is removed. And in fact, only by hearing Krishna consciousness can one get that effect. One cannot properly get that effect through any other process. And when one cannot get even, you cannot go to Shiva, Brahma, or any demigod and get liberation. You can only get proper liberation from Krishna. Because as described in the Bhagavad Gita, whatever facility a demigod gives is actually given by me. Even, sometimes people say, "I'm going to Lord Shiva, we're worshipping Lord Shiva to get liberation." Lord Shiva cannot offer liberation without Krishna's sanction. They cannot give any benediction, material or spiritual, unless Krishna sanctions it. And Krishna will only sanction it if there's a tinge of bhakti. Even for liberation by approaching Lord Shiva, one has to have some tinge of bhakti somewhere like that for the results to be there. So in fact, it is the only process by which one can actually purify the heart to be attracted to those beautiful spiritual pastimes of Radha Krishna. And if we just, as humble devotees, even though we're lame, a little bit mad, a little bit bad, very ill-advised, still, if we try to hear, Krishna will intervene and bless us so that we attain perfection. And we then he will give us his lotus feet. That wherever we look in this world and whatever activities we're involved in, we see, "Oh, this is the mercy of the lotus feet of Krishna. Oh, here is the mercy of the lotus feet of Krishna. Here is an opportunity to serve the lotus feet of Krishna." You look at a beautiful woman, a beautiful man, here is an opportunity to serve the lotus feet of Krishna. Let them also hear about Krishna consciousness. I'll leave it there if anyone has any questions or comments.
Very good, David.
Did I have a good time? I had a great time. Is that what you said?
We all know devotees, ready to step for everyone, that lotus feet, Krishna is the only boat we can keep following. Because as Krishna says, don't be there. Anya Shilja to Mam, Yajana Purpaste, Yajana is Dhritana, Yog Kema Vayana. So we give you a guarantee that whatever you possess, I'll make sure you maintain, and whatever you need, I'll give you.
That's right.
Still we are so usually we are going from place to place and trying to. So how to, my question is, how to get the constant thinking, ananya thinking, how to think of the lotus feet all the time, besides chanting and deity worship, associated with devotees, and dham, like Nagar Mahamandir. So what other things we should think of? To think of continuously, uninterrupted.
If we take shelter of, if we can somehow associate with devotees.
Yeah, and your spiritual master also.
Yesterday I went to the hospital where one of the devotees' mothers passed away. I don't think she was like a full-time devotee in one sense, but at the same time, it would appear that, you know, it's natural. You know, some people have this natural Krishna consciousness from, they've grown up with that in India, worshipping Krishna, and she carried on, you know, through her early life, and her son, you know, is involved in serving Krishna, and so that helped her to, you know, just be a little bit more fervent to worshipping her deities of Radha Govinda at home. And she offered some nice food to her deity of Radha Govinda, and then she fell down with some heart problem. And then after 10 days, she started diminishing. Yesterday, so many devotees went there and chanted Hare Krishna. As she left her body, they were chanting Hare Krishna, doing a nice kirtan. Although, you know, most devotees here probably never would have seen her or met her, but because she was associated with devotees who were always in association with devotees fully and had some little such, that was enough for Krishna to give her the shoulder of his lotus feet, you know, and you see that, in essence, Krishna is showing her sons who are somewhat taking up Krishna consciousness, that if Krishna is going to, you know, give someone who's just making an endeavor, some, you know, a little endeavor, then, you know, what is she going to do for her sons that are trying to make a, you know, a full endeavor, you know, to dedicate their full life? So Krishna's showing.
Explaining.
He's making arrangements. And also demonstrate, just like with the elderly lady, you know, who was blind, and Krishna put his foot on the stone. You know, she was just in the association of devotees, but not necessarily for hearing and chanting. But that was enough that you get the Krishna. So Krishna's full mercy. So if we take shelter that anyone who does a little service to Prabhupada's movement, whatever they can. We can barely, you know, imagine how merciful, you know, we're talking about these loving pastimes. He's so loving and lovable that, you know, the gopis, you know, they feel a separation from one moment. They just cannot exist. Because he's too loving. You know, his reciprocation in love is unlimited and very deep and all-encompassing, very sweet. So such a personality, if we take shelter of someone like Srila Prabhupada, who's very, very dear, then Krishna's love for Srila Prabhupada just splashes all over people who are just even slightly remotely, you know, related to him in some way, you know, somehow or another, they're just doing anything. You know, so Krishna sends his devotees like that. So that's the opportunity. Somehow or another, just keep the connection, especially with, you know, someone like Srila Prabhupada, and of course his followers. Then if they're very, very dear to Prabhupada, then they're just as dear to Krishna. And if we become very, very dear, you know, to the followers of Srila Prabhupada, we become just as dear to Krishna, very loving. So, therefore, it's described that if one takes shelter of the lotus feet, when we say lotus feet, Prabhupada says a lotus has the shape of a boat. So what Krishna does to make things easy is that if we take the shelter of the lotus feet of Krishna by being in the association of these devotees and hearing the chanting, doing little service, the entire material ocean, so you know that vast, the entire material existence, the entire material energy, not just the universe, not just this one, it shrinks to the size of the water in what you find in the calf's footprint, and the devotee just easily steps over it. So Krishna makes it easy. If we keep in contact with Krishna and his devotees, he makes it easy. We may think to ourselves, we really have to cause ourselves a lot of trouble when Krishna's making it so easy to not be successful. So if Krishna says, you know, you just hear from me, that's it, right? So we think, oh, that is very difficult. I have to sit and hear. But if we can do that, Krishna says, for that person, they're just trying to hear. That's it, nothing more. But then, he's going to shrink up the entire material existence to this little bit of water that you just step over, make it that easy for us. And we're still thinking it's too difficult. That's why, you know, Jayatam Siddhartha Pangor, Lai, Mama Mandamati, you know, so much endeavor. Krishna comes as the Panchatattva, he gives us the Bhagavad Gita, he gives us the Srimad Bhagavatam, he brings the entire spiritual world and displays all these pastimes. He sends his devotees and he gives us our, and then he says, just chant my holy name, hear that, like that. And we, because we are, and that's why I say, we shouldn't laugh at King Karanjana. Because we are the Pango Mama Mate Mati. He gives that prasadam. That's another thing. So how easy it is. So, you know, I guess the thing to do is to learn from Krishna Das Kaviraj. If we understand that I am very, very helpless in spiritual life, even when I'm trying my best. So if I can just keep in the association of devotees, then that's all we need to do. And even if we're somewhat an accidental nuisance, like me, Krishna will still bless us so that the rest of the devotees can go on hearing and chanting without us causing too much botheration. Okay? So, Prabhupada ki jai.